It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. What a big news week. It looks like we've got a new CEO at Microsoft. Google dumps Motorola. And there's finally a TV show about us called Selfie. It's all next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 443, recorded February 2nd, 2014. Selfie in the City. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Stamps.com. Start using your time more effectively with Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. For our special offer, visit Stamps.com, click the microphone, and enter TWiT. And by FreshBooks, the simple cloud accounting solution that helps thousands of entrepreneurs and small business owners save time billing and get paid faster. Try it for free for 30 days at GetFreshBooks.com. And join over 5 million users running their business with ease. And by LegalZoom. Visit LegalZoom.com to save on your legal needs and gain access to a network of legal plan attorneys for guidance. LegalZoom is not a law firm, but provides self-help services at your specific direction. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code TWIT to receive $10 off at checkout. And by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get 2 free books. Go to audible.com/twit2. And don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter, user ID audible_Tom. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show that covers all your week's tech needs. Joining me are mostly Canadians and one guy who forgot there was a game. Jason Heiner from Tech Republic is here, CBS Interactive. Nice to see you, Jason.
Hey, good to be here, Leo.
You're a football fan.
I am a football fan. Go Broncos. Peyton Manning. More a Colts fan, but, you know, Peyton Manning's playing.
I'm with you.
Still dig Peyton.
I'm with you.
Yes.
I'm with you on that one. Also here, Renee Ritchie, who is wearing his... Is that your Montreal Canucks shirt? I don't know. I've never seen this shot. This is a unique shot for you.
I renovated. I put in new shelving. I redecorated for you, Leo.
Renee is, of course... at imore.com, great website, but he also covers BlackBerry and Android and is a regular on MacBreak Weekly every Tuesday on this network. Great to have you.
It's a great shot, by the way.
I know. I love it. It's beautiful. Soon to join us will be Matthew Ingram, also a Canadian. Yet you'd be amazed at how many tech journalists are actually secret football fans. I don't understand it. Here's a fellow who's got a clear allegiance to some team. I don't. Bill Gates tweeted this a little while ago.
Oh my!
He's looking more and more like Woody Allen as time goes by. That is a he just it, it doesn't it does it. For, Bill, take off the tie, maybe.
Have you seen them in the same room together, Leo? That's the obvious question.
And the hat looks big. It looks like the hat didn't fit. Anyway, he's wearing Seahawks garb because he's from Seattle and all of that.
Ballmer's an owner, right? Or no, is it the
is that true?
Basketball team? The basketball, maybe it's the basketball
the
team.
The Supersonics? Yeah. No, Paul Allen, who is one of the founders of Microsoft, owns the Trailblazers and I think the Sonics, but Ballmer might be involved in that as well.
Yeah.
Or does he own...
Those guys up there. They own lots
Nerds
of
in their sports.
They got plenty of
Nerds money. In their sports, yes.
So we had a little debate whether we should move TWiT, and we decided to do it at the same time, 3 p.m. Sunday, even though there will be a Super Bowl going on at some point during this broadcast.
A little football game. Just a little game.
Who cares? Do you really?
You can watch it next year. You know, that's what I put on Twitter.
It's on every year.
Come look. You can watch Super Bowl next year.
I cared last year when our team was in it. And actually, I enjoy watching. But you got to admit, it's for the ads. For a lot of it. I mean, for a lot of people, even if they aren't into football, this is the most expensive ad buy of the year, and it is usually, you know, you put your best foot forward during these ads. In fact, there's many companies that don't advertise any time. In fact, very famously, about 30 years ago, a little fruit company named Apple
had a Super Bowl ad announcing the Macintosh. That was a big deal.
1984, Leo.
1984. Why 1984 won't be like 1984. I remember the first time I saw a tech ad. It was for a .com, I think, in the late 90s on the Super Bowl. And I was...
Oh, yeah. Remember that? During 99 and 2000, all the tech companies that were advertising the Super Bowl, there were companies that they put their whole advertising budget into buying one... into buying Super Bowl ad. And I think some of them only had like one spot or maybe two spots. And their whole budget for the year, they put into one Super Bowl ad. That sort of sums up the .com boom for you.
Most of them were out of business.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you're still around.
Yeah. Here's, Squarespace has a Super Bowl ad this year. This is...
Wow.
Yeah. It's a little creepy, a little weird. It's all the weird stuff on the internet.
Lower your mortgage. People who bought this also bought this.
We can't
epic fail.
That's what the internet looks
but
like.
We can change what it will be. A better web starts with your website.
Isn't that nice? Good for them.
Not bad.
That's some of that venture capital money going in there. I don't know how many other tech companies, probably IBM. There was some question about whether Apple might do a 30th anniversary ad, which would have been great. But these are millions of dollars, these ads. So, it's not something you do on a whim.
Mm-hmm. They're doing 90-second Myverse commercials everywhere.
Right. Right. What do you call it? Live verse?
Your verse. What is your verse?
What is? And Robin Williams in a tub.
What is your verse? Well,
yeah, it sounds like someone recorded it off the VHS copy using
Walt Whitman said. What is your verse? So the big story of the week, we should probably get right into it because people are already leaving. I'm sorry, the Super Bowl got in your way. I apologize. They just set up a giant screen so that I wouldn't miss the game. And of course, we've got people there. So that was thoughtful. The big story probably. Well, there's quarterly results from Facebook, from Apple, from Facebook and Apple and Microsoft. But I think the big story has to be the shocker that happened on Wednesday. Google announced that they were selling Motorola. They just bought it 19 months ago.
Yeah.
To Lenovo.
Lenovo-rola.
Motorola. Is that what we're going to have?
Lenovo-rola.
Lenovo-rola. Ugh.
Mm-mm-mm.
Now, Lenovo bought in... 2005 bought IBM's ThinkPad business and kept the name, kept the quality, didn't really innovate tremendously, but over time they've improved. They're probably a good steward of Motorola, yes?
They wanted to buy BlackBerry and the Canadian government said no.
Oh. Yeah, Lenovo does make phones. They do make, as you might expect because they're a Chinese company, they do make phones that sell well in China. They don't have a presence, as you probably know if you live here, in the U.S., or Europe. Motorola's Moto X is now sold in Western Europe, in the U.S., in South America, so it would get them quickly into that market. Some people said that the problem was that Motorola phones weren't selling well for Google, and it was a big drain on Google. I kind of credit Larry Page when he says, he posted a blog post saying, in order to succeed in the phone business, I'm paraphrasing here, you got to be all in. And we just... didn't want to devote that much energy to it. We're not getting out of hardware. Remember, they bought Nest.
Mm-hmm.
We're not, and of course, Google Glass. It's not that we don't want to do hardware. Some people speculated that, but we just don't think the phone business is a good business for it. Now, I'm reading between the lines, but this is what I think happened. Samsung bitched mightily. Didn't like the idea that Google was competing with them with handsets. Samsung is selling, I don't know, 100 times more handsets than Motorola did. They are an important partner, and they're starting to pull away. They're doing Tizen. They're junking up their phones, making it less and less Android-like. And Google had, I think, a little gut check and said to itself, what is our business? Are we trying to make money on phones? No. We make money when people use Android. When people use the apps on Android, that's when we make money. What is our interest here? Getting more companies to use Android, not scaring them away, but getting more companies to use Android. This, to me, makes perfect sense. You might wonder, well, why'd they buy Motorola in the first place?
patents. Blackmailed into it over patent.
Patents.
Patent infringement chart.
And there was a great Joy of Tech comic in which, let me see if I can find it, Lenovo's shopping. And they come to a garage sale. And there's a big Android. It's a Google yard sale. They say, what's the story with that blue one? It was bought for me, but it really didn't fit, says the Android. Oh, so it's like a regift. I'll take it for $1 billion. Get serious. They paid $12 billion for it. What about $2 billion? $8 billion and it's yours. What else are they selling, by the way? The Nest. $2.9 billion is my final offer. Sold! Let me put it in a bag for you. Lenovo walks off, looks in the bag, says, wait a second. Where are the patents?
You know, if you look at the timeline, they kind of clowned around with the entire Nortel patent suite and ended up losing out on that to Rockstar Bilco. And then Motorola was saying, you know, we're going to sue everyone else who makes Android devices because we're not making any money, but we have these patents. So they bought Motorola and kind of quietened them down. The litigation they were doing didn't really pay off because it was mostly standards essential patents and they couldn't really win on those. And they were producing hardware, but they were not producing money. And that's not a very attractive deal for Google. Nest seems to make much more sense for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. This deal is maybe not quite as bad as it looks for Google. I mean, Google needed to get out of this. This thing was a massive drain on their bottom line. They were not all in clearly on this. They tried to run Motorola separately. I think they told them to go out and be innovative and do some interesting things, and they did. They were starting to do some interesting things. So you could make the argument that Motorola was really just getting started. I mean, the Moto X is a good product. They were manufacturing it in the U.S. They were innovating a little bit on the way consumers go and could customize it and that kind of thing. They had started talking about middle of last year about some of the cool things they wanted to innovate on. By the way, that innovative group that was doing those cool things like pills that, you know, you could authenticate wirelessly and stuff just using your the electromagnetic forces in your body and crazy stuff like that. You remember that?
Yeah.
They are reportedly, The Verge reported that they are actually keeping that unit.
That's right. They're keeping Aura, which is the modular phone system that Motorola was developing, and all of the Blue Sky research, the R&D.
Yeah, that R&D group that was run by what's her name?
Regina Dugan. She used to be with DARPA.
Yes. Yeah, Regina Dugan from DARPA. Really smart that they kept that.
Had divested the set-top box.
They did.
Business. So that was $2.4 billion.
Yep.
The patents were worth, some say, $6 billion. This is not the money loser, it looks like.
No.
They probably broke even.
They probably broke even.
Yeah, right. It's not a money loser if you're losing money.
No, and clearly, you know, this was between Samsung and Google, there was some massive tension between those two. It was going to end badly. That was not going to end well for either one of them, honestly. So this sort of clears the air on that. And it's no accident,
is it, that Samsung, just before this announcement, agreed, we're going to, put less cruft on our phones. They agreed with Google. We're going to junk up our phones less, and we will give users the right to uninstall the junk we put on there.
And they'll also get rid of that magazine UI that they debuted on their brand new tablets, which
horrible.
Is very different than Android.
I have that on, Note 3. It was really clear to me that Samsung was saying to Google, it was saber-rattling, serious.
Oh, totally.
We're moving away. We're going to do what Amazon did.
They had their own developer conference. They've been doing their own app store.
Yep.
So this was a rear guard. This was at Google saving its butt because you can't have the company that's selling 80% of the smartphones out there not selling an Android phone.
Yeah, and this I have no doubt this was in the works for a while. It's funny. I talked a lot with Lenovo people at CES, and they actually announced some phones there. But they kept clearly saying, and by the way, you know, these are not going to, we haven't announced that these are going to be released in the U.S. They were actually some really nice phones, as far as, you know, these sort of devices go. And They kept saying, you know, we're not saying that we're going to release these in the U.S. You know, we don't have carrier relationships yet and all of that kind of thing. And so I just had this feeling like something, you know, they were sort of dancing around something, like something big was going on. And, you know, I mentioned a couple of people privately, like, keep an eye on this. Something's, you know, happening with them because they're really dodgy about this. And I've got a feeling they're either about to announce something with a bunch of carriers or do a deal or something. And clearly this was the deal. You know, it was to buy Motorola. And actually, I think it's there is another factor we wrote about this. Obviously, we our site, you know, Tech Republic writes a lot of stuff aimed at people who use these devices to do work and get work done and to pass them out in large companies. And this deal does have the potential to help Android break through in the enterprise. Because as you guys know, you know, in the enterprise and in business, it's really, especially in the US, it's a big iPhone story, iOS. It's somewhere in the neighborhood of 60 to 70% of the devices that are sort of sanctioned in the enterprise, whether they're BYOD or, you know, things that you pass out, are iOS devices. Androids had a real problem breaking into the enterprise. This is a deal that could help because both Lenovo and Motorola have great DNA in knowing how to work with the enterprise, both from sort of BYOD standpoint and, you know, traditional enterprise machines. And so this is the one thing we wrote a piece on Tech Republic this week that, you know, this could be the move that helps kind of Android turn the corner in the enterprise.
Interesting.
So that's something to watch for.
Interesting. I'm only sad because I just bought another Moto X. I got the wooden one. And they, you know, I guess it's not a coincidence. They had a deal on Monday. It was $100 off. So unlock 350 for 32 gigs, 250 for 16 gigs, or I guess 300 for 16 gigs. So it was a really good deal. I should have known. You know what?
Strong.
When you see a clearance deal, you should know, shouldn't you? You'd think I've been buying this crap long enough to know.
Well, they're still selling that device, though. They're not running away from that device.
Well, obviously. And this is going to take a while. They've got to get China and the U.S. government to approve it. This could take 6 to 8 months. Could take a year. So figure I got a little time left. But I think this Moto X was the best Android phone ever. I would love to see better hardware, a bigger screen. But, you know, I bought the Note 3, and I love the hardware on the Note 3, better camera. But
all that
it's
crapware,
so
though.
Crapped
well,
up.
The ideas on this phone were better. It took too long to get it out, so they have a lot of old, like they have 720p display and older chipsets. But a newer version of this phone, completely spec'd out, would be fantastic. And you have to think Lenovo, at least short term, is going to keep that roadmap.
So I think they're capable of doing it, aren't they?
They will.
Absolutely.
They can execute. Lenovo knows how to execute on hardware. I mean, they did it when they bought ThinkPad. I mean, they have executed their tails off with that.
They did.
You know, year over year over year, they just keep putting out good devices. They keep improving it, and they do good stuff.
And I, for one, can't wait for a Nest phone from Google.
A dial on the front and knows when you're watching, knows who you want to call.
With a click wheel.
But am I wrong in thinking that really the value for Google is that more people use Android? They don't care whose hardware they use it on.
They make more money off iOS still than Android, Leo. They really don't care what you're doing as long as you have Google services on your device.
Yeah. That seems right. And I also think that if you could put a better screen on the Moto X, if you could put a better camera on the Moto X, if Lenovo could do that, the stuff that's in here, the awareness of what's going on,
always listening, the co-processors, active display.
It's brilliant, and I think that there's something here, but it didn't catch on.
It was the most innovative phone of 2013. If I had a list of most innovative phones of 2013, that would be number one on the list, right?
That's saying a lot.
That nobody else was doing, they actually innovated and did some new stuff and provided new value in a year when there wasn't a lot of new things going on.
Right.
So I think it's a great device. It's a good start. It needs to improve in a number of ways, but Lenovo just got a huge leap forward in what they were doing in phones.
Yeah.
And they also had a bunch of Google people down there helping them. So we'll see what it's like when Lenovo gets there.
Well, I think Google was at great pains to keep a little bit of a Chinese wall, if you will, between Motorola and Google?
I don't know. I mean, as far as I know, they had tons of Google people working closely with Motorola. That's a Google phone. I mean, that runs Google's version of Android, and that has a lot. Like, the Google Now integration is better than the Nexus. I mean, they put a lot of effort into making that the best Google phone this year.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Will they still make it in America?
I think they will. I think they will.
I think that's a selling point, don't you?
Yeah, it is. And they do a lot in America, right? I mean, I don't know. Remember, that's really a U.S. market-only phone, too. I remember when it first came out, I knew a bunch of people in Europe that were really interested in that device. Right. And they were bummed that they weren't.
They have added now. They've added Western Europe. They just started selling it in Western Europe, South America, too. So it gets them into markets that that Lenovo's not in, but has already. They said a year ago, Lenovo said, we want to be in the U.S. market. We're going to be in the U.S. market.
I mean, we're sniffing around for a long time to get in there.
Yeah, this is their play. BlackBerry was, you know what, they probably knocking on wood. Oh, we didn't get BlackBerry. Oh, wow.
Dodged a bullet. Yeah. Dodged a bullet there. You know, they have a huge presence in Research Triangle Park in North Carolina.
Lenovo is. Oh, interesting.
Monstrous. Huge. Interesting. All those people that used to work for IBM down in RTP now work for Lenovo. They bought all of that ThinkPad division originally, and that all of that was being run down there, most of it, and they own that. And now they bought that server division from IBM as well, and so they've got all those people down there in RTP. So they've got a big presence in the U.S.
Do you think Matthew Ingram has just joined us? Matthew, great to have you from GigOff.
Hi. Thanks. Sorry for being late.
That's right. We're talking about the Lenovo story, first story, so that's not a – you didn't miss much. I'm about to wrap it up, though, if any thoughts you have. Do you think people will have a hard time buying a phone from a Chinese manufacturer?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think it really depends on the quality of the phone. If they can keep it at a certain quality level, I don't think anybody would have a problem with it, at least not that I know.
They're not worried about Chinese spying. You know, we got a warning from Congress not to buy Huawei or ZTE phones or devices because the Chinese government owned them or military owned them and was spying
only
on them.
Only NSA spying, Leo. No Chinese
spying. We got enough to worry about with the U.S. spying.
It's ironic, but this NSA story actually helps Lenovo. It actually helps Lenovo. That is weird.
That is weird. But you're right.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to have lots more. Great to have you. Matthew Ingram is here from GigaOhm.com. Renee Ritchie from iMore.com. From Tech Republic and CBS Interactive, Jason Heiner. We're talking the week's tech news. Our show today brought to you by Stamps.com. They didn't buy a Super Bowl ad, but they should have. Because Stamps.com, if America only knew about Stamps.com, they'd go nuts. Stamps.com turns you and your little operation, maybe it's a big operation, turns your desk into a professional fulfillment center. You print postage from your computer, your printer. You print right on the envelope. If you're using envelopes, you print on a label. You slap on the box. They've got a USB scale, so you know always exactly what postage. You know, the rates went up this week. Stamps.com customers don't care. Automatic free upgrade, so they always have the right postage. A lot of people have postage meters. Actually, I had made a trip to the post office, and it cost them more money. This is such a good way to do mailing. If you do mailing in your business, invoices, mailers, flyers, maybe you sell on Etsy or Amazon or eBay or PayPal or something like that. It's aware, smart software. It's aware of those sites. For instance, let's say you sell something on Etsy. You want to mail it out. It will automatically print the mailer for it. You put the package on the scale. It'll print it. Takes the address of the buyer from the Etsy site. If it's an international purchase, it automatically fills out the international forms. It just makes life easy if you're selling online. All right, so here's the deal. I want you to try it. It's free for 30 days. Here's how you get our special offer. If you go to the website, you'll see an $80 value, but I think there's a better way to go. Click that microphone. Use the offer code TWIT. That'll turn the $80 value into a $110 bonus offer. You get $55 in free postage. You can use in the first few months of your account, you get that scale. You just pay $5 shipping and handling on that. You get a $5 supply kit and 4 weeks of stamps.com free. Stamps.com. Use our offer code TWIT. It is really awesome. So this is a first. I think this is a first. The Super Bowl is being streamed this year free. You can go to superbowl.foxsports.com. You three are on because you don't care. Actually, Jason's on because he forgot it was Super Bowl Sunday. You guys are from Canada.
Yeah, our football's over. Three downs. We're done.
Yeah. You got the what is it? The Grey Goose cup, and it's over.
The Grey cup, same as the Earl Grey tea.
Yeah, there's no goose involved. But yeah, I thought this was very interesting. They do have ads. They're not the same ads as on the TV. There are fewer of them. But if you go to SuperBowl.FoxSports.com and start streaming right away, it does not, as others have done, say, who's your cable company? Who's your daddy? They don't ask you who's your daddy. They just do it. And I think that's
U.S. only, Leo?
I don't know. Try it. You want to try it? Go ahead. It's SuperBowl.FoxSports.com. It must be. But how? I don't know. Maybe not.
Because I just want the ads, frankly.
Well, but this is the thing. These are not the ads that you'll see on the Super Bowl.
Yeah, only available in the U.S.
Only in the U.S. Matthew Ingram can't do it. You're in Toronto, right, Matthew?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lots of the ads have been released already. I mean, you can find them. Lots of the companies, very smartly, have released their ads. And
remember
you can see
the days when, in the earliest days of the internet, pre-YouTube, there was a company that had all the Super Bowl ads on the website, and they got shut down. Mm-hmm. Like Budweiser said, imagine? How dare you show our ad on the internet? What?
Can you imagine?
Yeah. And the ads got leaked, and now the companies are all leaking them themselves.
They think this
calling them banned.
What's wrong with more? Ads. So where is there a site that we can go just to watch the ads if you're not interested in sports ball? Probably YouTube, right?
I'm trying to pull it up here. Yeah, YouTube, exactly. Fast Company had this great story earlier today, like the best Super Bowl ads ever by category. I Twittered it. Let me find it. There were some classics in there. Ones I'd totally forgotten about a long time ago.
What's hysterical? If you try to watch Super Bowl ads on YouTube, they put an ad in front of the ad.
Yeah. An ad. Ad.
Oh, yeah. It's one of our sponsors. It's LegalZoom, so I'm not going to complain, but that's a little weird. I have to watch a 30-second pre-roll ad so I can watch ads.
Only in America. Actually, it's international.
It's all over the world now, baby.
That's right.
Yeah. No, the ads are a big part of the Super Bowl. In fact, I was saying before we began, the actual gameplay of any NFL football game is 11 minutes. Mm. So if you wanted to, you could just edit out the ads, the huddles, the crap, and you'd have 11 minutes of action. And it takes about 3 hours to watch. The Super Bowl sometimes takes even longer than 3 hours because they pause a lot for the ads. If you go to an NFL game, a Monday Night Football game, I was at Monday Night Football game about a month ago, and the game is stalled regularly. They wait. There's what they call an ad timeout. Mm-hmm. And the poor players just have to stand. It's just terrible. Yeah. Just standing around. Anyway.
Pays the bills.
Hey, it's money. It's lots of money. What is the...
We play rugby, Leo.
In rugby, there's no standing around.
You're not allowed stopping. I think that's the international rugby.
You can have a long scrum, though. Because sometimes those scrums go on so long. You know, with that thing where they're huddled and they're going like this.
They should sponsor the scrums.
They should. put a little ad in the crotch shot. You know, just... how much is the Super Bowl as a Super Bowl ad? Gee, I wonder if there was some way I could, like, search the internet for that.
Yeah, if only there was a...
If only there was, Super Bowl ads, latest info on Super Bowl ad costs, record number of people expected to tune in, blah, blah, blah.
$4 million is what it's up to right now?
For $4 million for a 30-second ad?
Yeah.
Whoa!
I'm gonna start one for next year right now.
Squarespace, you could have bought the Twit Network for 3 years for that. You got one 30-second ad, and I guarantee you we produce more results on one of our ads in your Super Bowl. Oh, man.
Yeah, but Stamps.com, see, they couldn't afford to because they advertise on Twit. So
that's right.
That Super Bowl
Squarespace
ad.
Advertises on Twit. They should have spent some of that on $4 million.
Well, now they'll know, Leo. They tested it, and now they'll know.
They'll know now. Yeah. So GoDaddy is back, but there won't be I don't think it'll be the sexy GoDaddy anymore. They have a new...
No Danica Patrick?
No. Well, I don't know. Remember the disgusting ad last year was a geek kissing Bar Raffaele?
They've gotten so much backlash.
Good.
I know a bunch of people that have said they'll never do business with them.
Yeah. I pulled all my domains, put them over on Hover. CarMax, that's a web play, isn't it? A lot of AT&T and T-Mobile ads.
Is there a Microsoft one they announced earlier today?
Yeah, Microsoft's good.
That's right.
I still want, let's see if we can find Microsoft's Super Bowl ad.
Power of technology. Power of software.
All right, we're just going to see if we can find this. It reminds the world why it is, why its software matters. You know, bad sign if you have to remind the world. Let's see. Here's the Microsoft. You don't have to watch the Super Bowl. Just watch us.
Field goals. Look out. Right through. A kick butt by Steve Gleason. Touchdown, New Orleans.
It's kind of unbelievable that Steve has a statue.
The statue is not about football. It's a symbol of the people in this region who chose to return and rebuild.
This is the Superdome in New Orleans.
I have ALS. With ALS, a person loses the ability to move and breathe on their own.
Oh, he's talking through
his communicate verbally with
computer.
The eye tracking technology.
Wow.
I am Michelle Veriska Gleason. I am the wife of Steve Gleason.
That's neat.
And the mother of Rivers Gleason. Team Gleason is a foundation that Steve and I started a year after Steve was diagnosed.
Part of our mission is to raise awareness of this disease. And
specifically, this is the Microsoft
ad. Help other people with ALS to live their lives.
They haven't mentioned Microsoft once.
Communication is a key element to our quality of life. The eye tracking technology runs on Windows, and Surface was the latest product
we've
discovered where it was enabled.
All day he's on his computer, whether he's tweeting or he's speaking. That's powerful cool. enough for him, which
it's
is huge.
Really cool.
I think Father
is it a surface?
Means almost everything to Steve.
Rivers, are you showing up?
Wow, he's talking to his kid.
With Rivers, it's created a special bond that many fathers and sons
so it is
would never
Windows
have.
A, it's a
he's able to get some physical time with Rivers because he'll climb up
surface.
On his lap.
Yeah, it is.
Steve,
yeah.
when they're
That's
watching movies
really
together,
cool.
can talk back and forth to Rivers about what's going on. And the time that he has with Rivers on his lap, I think it's safe to say, are his favorite times.
Okay, I'm about
they
to cry.
They say your eyes are the window to your soul. I suppose this means the technology allows me to bear my soul.
Now, if this is the YouTube version.
Although I'm hopeful
and it's two and a half
for a
minutes.
Cure for ALS.
If they
I've always said, until there is one, technology is my cure.
That's pretty cool.
Wow.
He says, until there is one, technology is my cure.
That's so great storytelling.
That is a great ad. That's right up there with those Google storytelling ads. That is a great ad.
Reminds me of that a little bit. It's real, so you know it's even a little better. But is that Apple one that they did at Christmas? Is 2.5 minutes?
Yes,
long?
Yes.
Kind of break the mold, right? People
misunderstood.
Don't watch.
Misunderstood. Yeah, the emo kid's looking at his smartphone, not participating until you realize he's been making
a
movie.
One.
Yeah.
That one was more honestly more groundbreaking than that one. That one I thought they did some really interesting things in that ad. Whatever you think of the veracity of it, but it's pretty interesting. I think this one's just good storytelling. That Microsoft ad is good storytelling. I mean, some of what people do in ads is that's more about brand than it is about product, right? It's making you feel good about being associated with that brand. And I think they did that pretty well.
That's the way to do it. You know, it's so much better than seeing them scroogling Google or slamming Apple. Just, you know what? Show what people do that how technology is empowering. You're going to get the benefit of that.
That technology alone is not enough, Lion. That, you know,
I love that.
Stressed more. Absolutely.
Yeah.
This
is a whole series. They have surgeons operating with Kinect. Might make me a little nervous. school kids using Skype, a 97-year-old man creating art in Microsoft Paint. And you remember the video of Sarah Sherman, who was born deaf but got cochlear implants and heard for the first time. That was a viral video on YouTube, 20 million views. They do an ad with her as well.
If you remember all the WWDCs, when they introduced FaceTime and they introduced Siri, they showed someone doing sign language. They showed someone being read to. They showed someone being able to walk for the first time in a forest that they'd never seen. That's the kind of stuff that, I mean, it makes nerds cry. That's the kind of powerful storytelling the companies need to do.
And it's not nerds. These ads are not aimed at nerds. They're aimed at real people. Right?
Hey, nerds.
Well, it's the mainstreaming of technology. It's trying to. It's that we believe mythology that we want to make people. We want to make people's lives better, not just make their technology faster and, you know, bigger and louder and noisier.
Will Apple do a Super Bowl ad in the 30th anniversary of its 1984 ad?
It should just run you with your Mac Pro Leo on the Fondle Cam. And that for 30 seconds.
It's unknown. It hasn't been leaked if they do it. But
yeah.
If you're watching the game and the show, join our chat room and let me know. By the way, at the same time as Google sold Motorola Mobility, they bought an artificial intelligence company. For $500 million, the idea being to use DeepMind's artificial intelligence to improve search, the knowledge graph, in specific. Anybody have any insight on this idea? Is this something? Ray Kurzweil, remember the great artificial intelligence scientist, joined Google's AI efforts about a year ago. He's working on the knowledge graph, building out something called, quite scarily, the Google Brain. Might as well just call it Skynet and get it over
with. Star Trek computer.
If
Google's not all in on smartphones, which they never were, clearly,
right.
They are all in on AI and robots right now. I mean, they are investing in lots of startups. Just over the last six months, you look at the number of the buys that they've made in robots and in AI. They are clearly betting big that this is the future of their business.
I'm trying to Beatmaster in our chat room says they shouldn't call it the Skynet, they should call it her.
The Matrix. I'm trying to imagine you take the people behind Nest, you take the people behind Boston Dynamics, you take the people behind DeepMind and put them all together. That's, you got a, you know, either tremendously exciting or terribly frightening.
Beautiful looking Terminators.
It makes sense.
Robot dogs that sense your temperature and anticipate your movements. They might as well just call it Skynet right now.
Yeah.
It's pretty interesting brain trust, that they're putting together on all of this stuff.
It kind of makes sense because if you're Google, you look at other companies that have rested on their laurels. You know, Google could say, hey, we're totally dominant in search. Look at Bing. Look at Yahoo. Nobody's going to compete with us. So we could just rest on our laurels. Or if you're smart, as anybody who runs a company should be, you say, okay, what's going to disrupt this? What's the next thing? How do we get there now while we've got revenue from the old thing?
Yeah.
And I mean, Google, when you think about it, Google has really been doing that for quite some time. Like, they've been talking about what happens after search.
Right.
So how can we show you things or give you things or anticipate things? I mean, that's what Google Now is. To give you things before you search, to make it so you don't have to search. That's what's going to disrupt search.
Is it your opinion that Nest was more about the team than the hardware?
Definitely. I mean, for me, you know, it's interesting hardware. I'm less interested in the sort of smoke detectors.
Yeah.
To me, it's the design. Those products, you know, are just a glimpse of what you could do if you rethought sort of home automation and the Internet of Things and so on. And in order to make that stuff kind of approachable, like make it easy to use, make people want to have it, you're going to have to design it the way the Nest was designed. It's got to be appealing. It's got to be, you know, super easy to use and sexy. And Google just isn't that good at that.
The best thing about Google and Apple to me, and what makes them, it's very rare that a big company does not mistake their product for their business. Too many companies think, oh, we've got a hit product, we have to hold on to it, and then they drive it right into the ground. But Google will kill anything that gets in their way, and they never want it to be a search engine. They want to be the Star Trek computer. They want to be an easily accessible repository for all the world's knowledge. And Google Search was an easy way to get there initially, but in order to get bigger, that's why they started scanning books. That's why they got into video. They want to be able to give you everything at a moment's notice, and of course harvest the data that goes along with that so they can afford to give you even more stuff. And when you look at Nest, for example, Tony Fadell is not just making nice looking smoke detectors. He's a guy who learned how to dent universes from Steve Jobs, and there's very few product people like that left in technology. And if you can get one of those on your payroll and make when the Internet of Things has to have an endpoint, and those endpoints have to be as amazing as the central repository, and that's what Google gets out of all these recent deals.
I mean, Nest is beautifully executed, right? And Nest really, there is a bit of artificial intelligence in Nest, even a very small bit in this sort of Internet of Things. But, you know, Nest follows your patterns, learns your patterns. Also, they know when, you know, they understand sort of spikes and they automatically will do things for you that save you money. You know, if there's no movement, it's got that that sensor in it that senses movement. If there's no movement, you know, it drops the temperature. It finds your patterns. Honestly, when I got one, I was expecting, I was like, okay, I'm going to have to sort of put some time into this thing and figure out, and I can go into the software because you can set up the patterns yourself. Say, okay, at 9 o'clock, you know, move the temperature down or that kind of thing. I never had to do it. It figured it out within a week, and I've never had to set anything with it, right? So, I mean, it basically has a small amount of its own AI. And it's just a beautifully executed product. So kind of like Renee is saying, when you have the opportunity to work with or, you know, bring in a team that is doing these really smart things with this very next generation thing, which is, you know, in the Internet of Things, then you do it. I mean, the fact that that Google seemed to buy it when nobody else, there didn't seem to be much of a bidding war for it, is probably the biggest surprise. Maybe Google just, you know, went to DEF CON 5 and said, we're going to spend whatever we have to get it. But I'm surprised others didn't try to get them. You know, not just Apple either, GE, IBM, lots of other people, Cisco, that are really interested in this kind of space. The fact that Google got them is a little bit of a surprise to me. And it's a clearly a big win for Google to get those guys.
Now, here's an interesting story that's related. In 2009, Carol Bartz, then CEO of Yahoo, said, we're not going to do search anymore. We're going to do a deal with Microsoft, 10-year deal with Microsoft, the Yahoo and Microsoft Search Alliance, and Bing will be Yahoo Search. They got out of the search business. But according to Kara Swisher, writing in Recode this week, there are two secret projects Marissa Mayer has started at Yahoo to bring back search. One's called Fast Break, and one's called Curveball. They're committed to Microsoft to 2019, but this is, anybody know anything about what's going on behind closed doors at this? Sources, according to Kara, said Myers put a priority on the projects, a 3 to 4 month time frame, which could eventually result in a full search engine, possibly more oriented to mobile than desktop.
She wants to own her own technology. Any big company wants to own their core technology, at least a serious big company. She doesn't want to be dependent on – it's an incredibly Marissa Mayer move to not want to be dependent on Microsoft for her core business.
Oh, yeah. And I would be shocked. I'd be shocked if they do not make their own. And long before 2019, if they do not break off from Bing and do their own thing in search, I would be shocked. I think that they're destined – Yahoo is destined to be Google's biggest competitor in search. I think that's why they bought Marissa – that's why they brought in Marissa Mayer. I think that that's why, you know, Marissa Mayer has been doing the aggressive things she's been doing from product. I mean, they are just trying to reinvent their product from the ground up, and search has got to be at the center of it. It's where so much of the big money is, and she knows how to do it.
But you know, I totally agree. It's smart. They more or less have to do it. Marissa has, you know, deep background in that. But, you know, Yahoo has been such a train wreck for so many years. Do they have anyone who's any good in search who stuck around? Or are they going to have to just go out and buy things and hire people? Because they were nowhere. They gave up. I mean, if you were interested in search, you just quit and left. Like, you can't just reinvent that stuff overnight.
No, I agree. I mean, it's not going to happen overnight. But I'm sure that and somebody sort of should go through the job listings, and I'm sure probably, you know, Kara and others have, but they are hiring people in search.
People though? I mean, I guess
there are a lot of board engineers sitting around big companies like Google and Facebook who got hired because they wanted all the talent and have very little to do. And these people don't like sitting around. So if you can identify them and make them an offer that lets them think they'll be able to create a great new product, you probably have an in with them.
Isn't that interesting?
Well, you got to admit, if you like underdogs, you know.
Right.
They're the underdog.
And having Marissa Mayer gives them some credibility. I mean, you might want to say, oh, I want to work for Marissa. She's doing something there at Yahoo. She's bringing the pride back to the purple.
I mean, look at some – they are doing some good things. I've been impressed with some of the stuff they're doing. You know, they've created momentum. They are product-focused.
Well, I think there's a clue in here, too, because it says mobile. And it's really clear that something that if you're going to succeed going forward, it's going to be on mobile. People are just not using desktops. The future is in smartphones, is in tablets. And it would be one way that perhaps you could scoop Google, although with Google Now and the things Google's doing with Android, I don't know.
Intermediate search on mobile, because mobile people go to – on the desktop, people go to the browser, and it's going to be very hard to teach them a habit of not going to Google.com. But on the on mobile, people go to apps, and apps can let you – Apple does it with Siri. Google tries to stop people doing it with Google Now. But on a phone, it's open season again.
Yahoo's done a couple of really good apps. They just did Yahoo Weather, and the new Yahoo News app is very good.
Those were the two I was thinking of just a minute ago when we were talking was, you know, those are the first two that came to my mind. They do great stuff with that. And you can, it's almost like micro search. It's kind of like the way social, you know, social was this big thing. Like you go to Facebook and all your social stuff is there. And now it's breaking out actually more. So you do Instagram for photos, you do, you know, different, smaller apps, you know, in different ways. It's not sort of the mammoth, you know, search could very much go this way. I think that's kind of what you're getting at, Renee, right? Is that, you know, you could break this into different pieces and you could be doing it in smaller slices, you know, where it makes sense. Things like searching for books, like it's searching for, you know, a service like you might do with Angie's List, or that's who Yahoo should buy next, you know, things
but
like
it's
that.
Still, when you think about it, it's still a huge. I mean, even if that is true, look at what Google has when it comes to Google Now. Look at the massive amount of data and signals and information, you know, deep information that they have about me and my usage of the web or my interests or any of that stuff, my email, all those things. Yahoo has nothing. You know, they basically have
hugely.
Zero.
Yeah, but for all that, I still don't have the Super Bowl skull on my Google Now.
I mean, they still have lots of people using Yahoo Mail. They still have lots of people going to the homepage. Yeah. They don't necessarily have nothing. They don't have what Google has. I mean, Google's clearly
about me.
Way ahead. They don't have much on me either, honestly. Right. But they do have lots of people who, you know, aren't techies that are, you know, into Yahoo or into, you know, pop culture and things like that. I guess that's why people go to Yahoo.com. It still is one of the – it's, you know, Yahoo has more traffic than Google if you count all of their stuff together now. I mean, they passed Google in 2013. So they do have people, they do have data. They don't have what Google has. And certainly if they're going back into search, it's not going to be, I think, going head to head with where Google is strong now. It is going to be them figuring out what is next. And probably it is more mobile. It is more Internet of Things. It is more
easy targets.
Easy targets, wearables, maybe, you know, if they can power sort of search in that, whatever it is that they're going to go, I think, for what's next and not sort of where Google's strong today. That would be the obvious answer.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, Facebook's quarterly results bring it back to life. I might have been premature in declaring their death. But first, a word from FreshBooks. Are you still using Word or Excel to create your invoices? Small businesses, freelancers, it's tough. I got to say, I hated doing invoicing. It was the worst part of my months. In fact, many's the time I just forgot or just didn't get around to it, and then I'd bill people 6 months later, and then they'd be really mad at me, and sometimes I wouldn't even get paid. That's when Amber MacArthur told me about FreshBooks. This was in 2004. I've been using it ever since. I don't need it anymore. I have a department that does this. But if you don't have a department that sends out the bills, if you're doing it in Word or Excel, if you have a shoebox of receipts to keep track of your expenses, you got to get FreshBooks. Get FreshBooks.com. It's the simple cloud accounting solution that's helping thousands of new entrepreneurs and small business owners just like you save time billing, get paid faster. It's beautiful. I love using it. You can easily create invoices online, capture and track expenses on the go, get real-time business reports with a few simple clicks. You get paid faster. Clients love it. You're going to love it. And you can try it free for 30 days. Sign up at GetFreshBooks.com. By the way, mention when there's a part of it which says, how did you hear about us? Mention This Week in Tech. And, you know, you could do it out of self-interest because they're giving a birthday cake every single day to somebody who signs up for a new account and heard about it on this show. You want a birthday cake? It doesn't even have to be your birthday. Every day could be your birthday. Try it free for 30 days. GetFreshBooks.com. We love these guys. I'm really glad to get them back on This Week in Tech. GetFreshBooks.com. Facebook record quarterly results. Facebook turned 10 this week. Mark Zuckerberg turned 30. revenue of $2.59 billion in the quarter, up 63%. But most important in these numbers, mobile.
Yeah.
They turned it around. And this was always, to me, the big question mark about Facebook is, can they make mobile pay? Well, they have. And it's pretty clear they're going great guns. They just announced it's coming out tomorrow, paper for iOS, which, I, you know, they say is kind of a news app. It's the next Facebook, don't you think? I think Facebook has figured out mobile. Now, paper does not have any ads for now. Yet. Yeah. Have any of you...
it's interesting.
Go ahead.
I looked at it because I wrote about it, but it's interesting that we were just talking about the sort of fragmentation of that mobile can bring, and how this is exactly what Mark Zuckerberg is talking about. He talked about it on the earnings call, and paper is a perfect example. They're going to make a bunch of these bets where they take a specific, you know, type of activity or a use case and turn it into a separate app. Instagram's a good example. Messenger is too. Whether it's going to work, I don't know, to be honest. Whether there are going to be enough people who want to use paper, I don't know. But it's a smart strategy, I think, particularly for mobile.
Well, and, you know, of course, Facebook Home was a resounding flop. And Facebook went all in on this modified launcher for Android.
But isn't it amazing, Leo, that they're willing to let Mike Mattis and his team, like, mess with their core experience? I can't see Apple or even, like, the Google front page letting, no matter how good the designer is, just say, you want to try something new? You want chat heads? Go ahead. You want to make a, you know, flipbook interface for Facebook? Go ahead. We're willing to try crazy things.
But this is, again, this is what I was talking about. You have to be willing to cannibalize your business if you're going to continue forward.
And they do that really well. We make fun of them because poke flops, or, you know, they try some new thing that's just terrible. But they just keep trying and trying and trying. You cannot stop them. And
they fail fast.
Some of that stuff works.
So you've been playing with it, Matthew. In your headline, you say Facebook heard you liked newspapers, so it decided to make a newspaper app out of your Facebook. But it does strike me that if this succeeds, it is your is this not going to be your Facebook feed plus?
Well, I don't think that's what they're trying to do.
They're trying to put real news sources in with your feed.
They're trying to give you a sort of more curated version of your feed and other people's feed.
But they've been doing that all along. I mean, my news feed is completely curated at this point.
Yeah, and so this is a sort of extension of that, diverted into a specific app. And I think they're trying, it's sort of A/B testing, right? They've got the existing feed, and then they've got this thing. And so they'll see, well, do people like that better or do they like this better? And what if, and how does being on mobile change the way you interact with your feed? I think the design of it is really interesting because it doesn't look like Facebook.
It's gorgeous.
There's none of the branding. There's none of the sort of colors. There's none of the look. And so they're clearly trying to carve out a separate thing but still use all the assets that they have within the Facebook feed. And that's, to me, that's smart. They've probably seen, they wouldn't admit this, but they've probably seen, you know, engagement decrease through the news feed. And so they've got to figure out a way to fix that.
And what Facebook has done in mobile over the past year is what I kind of consider one of the best big company pivots that I've seen in the sort of the digital age since about 2005, 2006, or maybe we call it like the social mobile kind of age. It's tough. I mean, Facebook got really big, really fast, and they actually were in some trouble, as we've all talked about over the past couple of years. And they really did turn the corner last year. And mobile is one of the, you know, it's almost a mobile first Facebook thing now. And it's working. I know people, I have relatives that are on Facebook now and have, and they use it solely on their phone. They never they never go to the site. They only use it there. They don't have all these other apps yet. These are more for kind of early adopter folks like us and younger folks who are on their phones all the time anyway and that kind of thing. But the fact that Facebook is serving both audiences and doing it pretty well and have pivoted is pretty big.
It is pretty amazing when you think about it. They, you know, not that long ago, their mobile revenues were zero, you know?
Yeah, they were nowhere.
Literally. Yeah.
I mean, they saw that mobile was going to be the next.
Over a billion.
They saw that mobile was going to be the next big thing. I mean, they messed around with making a phone, decided they didn't want to make a phone, made Facebook Home. They hired a slew of former iOS and Android engineers. I mean, they had Mike Mattis made Delicious Library. He made the photos and camera apps on the original iPhone and iPad. They got Lauren Brichter in. They had a very specific mentality. They didn't want to drop a frame on Facebook paper. They built this like it was a debut product on a mobile device.
It doesn't say Facebook anywhere on it.
No. they're recognizing there's multiple gateways to Facebook.
It's much better. You know what? Facebook is a negative.
They're trying to fool you into
They're fooling you. So they did this kind of in an Apple-y way. They made a Skunk Works. They took this creative, they created this thing called Creative Labs. They isolated them, right? Mm-hmm. And they said, you can do anything you want, do something completely different. Although I suspect, because Mark and Chris Cox have both said, they wanted to do a news-focused thing. They've been saying that for a little while.
This has been a vision of Chris Cox's for some time.
So this is
the best personalized newspaper in the world.
Yeah.
And their friends are all still way better looking than mine, Leo, except for you guys.
I know. Well, and this, of course, this is the problem with something like this. You look at it and you go, boy, that's gorgeous. And then you realize, oh, that's not my feed. But that's kind of the point. It could be one of the things they said, and you mentioned this, Matthew, in your article that was a little shocking is, we can use any content we want. We can use any status update, any Facebook feed we want.
Mm-hmm. It's all public.
Everything is now public.
Yeah.
The other thing that's built into this is that you can share from it. And you're kind of, I haven't used it, but you tell me, Matthew, you're kind of encouraged to share images. You're trying to, you can do fonts and typeface. They're trying to encourage you to make beautiful content.
Which is an interesting, again, it's a little like, what if Facebook didn't exist already? What would you do?
Right.
What would your app look like? How would it work?
It's funny because 10 years old, it looks very dated.
You'd make Flipboard or Storehouse is what you do.
Well, even Flipboard now is responding, by the way. Flipboard's a little scared. I think Mike McHugh said, oh boy. And Flipboard's changing how it works a little bit.
Yeah.
It's a fine balance. People don't go to Facebook to read the Huffington Post, or do they?
No.
No.
They want to see what their high school classmates are up to, or their kids or their grandkids.
Well, and I think the risk, you know, for me at least, is not just that Flipboard already has, you know, 100 million users, and it's a pretty well-designed app. They've got a big kind of head start on the content reading recommendation side. For me, what has stopped me from using Facebook as much is that the news feed, the utility of the news feed has gone down. You know, it's
That's right.
still... And so is this going to help with that? I don't know.
Might be the other direction.
Is it just going to make it work?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Renee, you've talked a lot about the technology built into iOS 7 and the new A7 hardware, including this tilt capability, this parallax capability, which you see on the desktop of iOS 7. Facebook's using this, tilt to explore vivid. Let's see if I can refresh this page. You can see it again. Tilt to explore full screen vivid images. This is something that is iOS specific, I would guess. They say they're going to do an Android version, but boy, I wonder if you can do this on Android.
I mean, it's interesting. A lot of these people did come from Apple, and a lot of them use iPhones as their devices, and they enjoy developing for the iPhone. There was a story a while ago about them having be forced to use Android devices when they were working on Facebook Home, and they did Android first last time. They're doing iPhone first this time, so it goes back and forth. But that was the whole point of iOS 7, was to make stuff come to life, that we'd had static screens and things that didn't really interact or respond with the world around us. And now when you start tying things into not necessarily M7, but the accelerometers and gyroscopes and things like that, it makes it feel like the phone is part of you. It's not a book or something static that you're holding in your hand. And it's very powerful as a interface mechanism.
Yeah. There is, I guess there's Facebook branding because you have the thumb. That's pretty, everybody knows that's Facebook, right? I'm thinking I should get my iPhone out of the cabinet and fire it up for this. Yeah.
Do it.
Because this looks very, I don't see an Android version coming too fast.
Yeah, I mean, they have to pick what devices they target and what capabilities those devices have and how easy it is to do it on how many devices.
So
I mean, I'd look for it on S4 and, you know, next
maybe
5
some of the high end. Yeah.
I
have to, and by the way, you can customize your paper with real sources like the Huffington Post or the New York Times. This is
GigaOm.
GigaOm. Is GigaOm part of a player?
Yeah. Yeah, we're a partner.
Interesting.
Nice.
I should have made a deal. Probably last week saying Facebook's over, it's dead, it's not that probably wasn't strategically and you know what? I was wrong, but I didn't see that
you
they were
motivating
gonna,
them, Leo.
Who knew that their quarterly results would be so mobile forward? Who knew that they had paper in there? I mean, they surprised me, and I'm actually very impressed. Although, remember how excited we were about Facebook Home and how far it went.
Mm-hmm. Still,
I'm much more excited about this than I was about Facebook Home. I'll be downloading this thing as soon as it's available tomorrow.
This is an app, so it's not as intrusive. So, Matthew, are you using it currently?
I have not gotten it yet. Yeah. I have only seen it sort of in action.
Renee, are you? Did iMore do a deal?
No, and it's also not going to be available in Canada at launch, so I'm
doubly screwed is what he's going to say, but he's too nice because he's Canadian. He's very polite. wow. This is what you need to do. When a company's 10 years old, that's an eternity in the internet, and you need to do stuff like this.
And they will write business cases about this. Sorry.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. I remember when this idea first came up, my first instinct was, this is going to fail.
Right.
You know, it's
I'm not even
convinced now that it's not going to fail. Right. But another part of me was thinking, you know, it's great that they're doing that. It's great that they can devote the resources. They can set up something like Facebook Labs. There are not that many companies that can do that or are willing to do that.
Right.
They might start little kind of skunk works and to give people time to do something, but they never take it seriously. Facebook seems to be willing to bet, you know, large parts of the company on these new things, and I find that refreshing.
Love that.
I think Facebook and Google are both really good at this. They they take R&D and they both things out and let people try them, and they hold them up to ridicule too, right? You think of Facebook Home, you think of Google Wave. I mean, these things were ideas. You think about what was that little round thing, the Google Sphere that they handed out a couple years ago.
The
really dumb stuff that they put out there, but they're taking risks and they put their research projects out there and let then they let people see them and poke holes in them, and then they go out and do something different if it's not good and the market doesn't accept it. Whereas if you look at the old way of doing research, you know, the way honestly Microsoft and Apple more do it. I mean, Apple's different because they take a completely different approach to it. But even Microsoft spends a ton of research, and most of it never comes to light, or maybe it might influence a product development cycle a little bit. But they don't do the sort of crazy things where Facebook and Google. I mean, these guys are still they're still throwing the ball deep, to use a metaphor, a football metaphor
they did
for today.
Ping, Jason, they did ping.
Oh God!
You're right.
That was great.
That was painful.
Great.
There was just an ad. It wasn't exactly an Apple ad. It was a U2 ad on the Super Bowl. U2 is giving away a song on iTunes called Invisible. And for everybody who downloads Invisible, the Bank of America will donate to Product Red $1 up to a total of $8 million. So that's a very interesting thing to do. I'm not sure what it means for U2 or Bank of America or Apple, but in a way that's an iTunes ad. What are they? I don't know who benefits from this more, or if anybody benefits from it, really.
The charity
benefits,
hopefully.
Yeah. U2's song Invisible is free. We will talk about Apple. We'll also talk about Microsoft. There's lots of news. We've got a great panel to talk about it, people who don't like football, apparently. Jason Heiner, who's regretting his calendar error right now, from CBS Interactive and the Tech Republic. Always good to have you, Jason. Renee Ritchie, a regular on Mac Break Weekly, doing double duty this week. Thank you. You can catch him at imore.com. We always love having you on, Renee. And, of course, we'll love Matthew Ingram, too, from GigaOM. You got three guys here who have their fingers on the pulse of technology. It's always nice to have some smart people on this show. Our show today brought to you by LegalZoom. Not a law firm, but LegalZoom helps you do the things you need to do to get your business started, to protect your family, to protect your trademark. When I first started Twit, I'd never done a business before. I asked my friend Kevin Rose. I said, Kevin, you've started a few companies. What do you suggest? Where do I start? He said, oh, LLC, but don't get a lawyer. Go to LegalZoom. Do it yourself for $99 plus state filing fees. It's easy. It was so simple. In fact, we're still using the operating agreement I generated back in 2005. You can do a Chapter S or Chapter C corporation as well. Over 1 million entrepreneurs have started their business at LegalZoom.com. And you know what's great? Over 90% of them would recommend LegalZoom to family and friends. People love LegalZoom because, look, you got to do the trademark registrations. I registered Twit, the name, and which didn't stop Twitter, but that's another story entirely. Twit, the name, and Twit, the logo. And that's $169. That's a great deal. You can do a will, $69, a living trust. If you have a power of health attorney, if you don't have one, you really ought to make one right now. Yeah, it's under, right there. Power of attorney for health. There's the trust. I'll tell you, LegalZoom is incredible. Healthcare power of attorney. One more down, Chad. There you go. That is something everybody should have. LegalZoom.com. As a way of thanking you for watching Twit and for using LegalZoom, we're going to give you $10 off. Just go to LegalZoom.com and use our discount code TWIT. LegalZoom's not a law firm. One of the things they do have, though, is they have attorneys. They pre-negotiated flat rate, very low fees with third-party attorneys in their LegalZoom legal plan system. In almost every state, you can read the attorney's profile before you engage them. You can also read unedited reviews so you know you're getting somebody who can help you. They can answer questions. It's very, very handy to have that. And it's nothing. It costs nothing. Zero nothing, but it's very affordable. LegalZoom.com. Start your business right. Protect your family. Do all those things you've been putting off. LegalZoom.com. Use the offer code TWIT. So Apple apparently met with the Food and Drug Administration. This is something that's required if you're going to do an application that makes medical recommendations. Nick Bilton and Brian X. Chen in the New York Times Bits blog caught this one. It was on the public calendar from December 9th through 13th on the FDA. Jeff Williams, Bud Tribble, Kathy Novelli, Michael O'Reilly, and Tim Powderly from Apple met with the FDA Commissioner of Food and Drugs to discuss mobile medical applications. This, to me, more than a lot of the rumor leaks, gives me reason to believe they might be doing a watch. Right, Renee?
Mm-hmm. They're all in on it. So it's not just a watch. They're all in on health. And the problem with health is if you have, for example, a blood sugar sensor or a hydration sensor or a heart monitor, that in your phone has very limited utility. But if you start to put sensors outside the phone, for example, on a wristband or a watch, then you can start taking that data, bringing it back to the phone. And that makes the service, and credit to Mark Gurman because he had an amazingly good scoop on this too. That makes the service that they can provide so much better than just a phone technology.
Yes.
By itself.
And I think they've learned from 23andMe, you don't bypass the Food and Drug Administration if you want to do something of value.
Bad idea.
They could shut you down. This was discovered by an attorney. Mark McAndrew is with Taft, Setinus, and Hollister. He said in a phone interview with The Times, given the prominence of the people in the meeting from both the government and Apple side, these were not run-of-the-mill conversations. He says they're either trying to get the lay of the land for regulatory pathways with medical devices and apps, and this was an initial meeting, or, and I believe the second, Apple's been trying to push something through the FDA for a while and they've had hang-ups.
If you go back to 2011, and they announced their textbook and education initiative, there's a few things that Apple as a company and the individuals in Apple care deeply, deeply about. One of those is education. The other one is health. Obviously, textbooks much easier to get to the market. Health has been a couple of years coming. And, this year looks like the year they go really big into offering health. I don't know if people would be happier if an iPhone threw cheeseburgers at them or if they will actually enjoy
it. I'd rather have the cheeseburgers, the cronuts. The taste, the Krispy Kremes. Give me a cigarette once in a while. Yeah. But no, but you know what? Baby boomers are getting up there, and we've got some money to spend, and that makes a lot of sense. Well,
and when you think about it, there's a lot of things that are, there's some relatively low-hanging fruit. I know Om Malik, who started GigOm, is diabetic, for example, has to take his blood sugar, it's dozens of times a day.
Oh, horrible,
so
yeah.
It's incredibly time-consuming and painful and irritating. And if you could have a wristband or even a contact lens or something that would do that type of stuff automatically, it'd be a huge, huge time saver and sort of pain saver. I mean, it would be massive.
Google's doing that, right? They've got a contact lens that looks in the blood, the sugar in your tears for diabetics and diagnoses their sugar levels from that.
Yeah, the only thing Om actually wrote about that because he was advised by his doctor that he shouldn't wear contact lenses because of his diabetes.
See, this is why you want to check with the FDA before you invent these things.
End users, yeah.
Yeah, and people who have diabetes so that they know. That's interesting.
I mean, the thing I think would be really – it's going to be really interesting here. You know, Apple – that was my hope when the iWatch thing started – leaking out was that they were doing something like this, you know, with health. Because if you think about the way that they created the iPod ecosystem and later iPhone, the iPod ecosystem eventually made it possible and paved the way for the iPhone in a lot of ways that are kind of forgotten now in terms of like docks and accessories and all of these things that all these third-party accessory makers that had you know, plugged into the ecosystem because it had scale and because Apple had, you know, some of that product mojo behind it. If you take that and you apply that to all of, if they could do that same thing with health to where, you know, every time you go to the gym, your iPhone or by extension, if you have the iWatch or whatever through Bluetooth or whatever the technology is that makes it happen, you know, you can scan that and it can pull in that information for whatever the machines you worked on. Same thing with, you know, all these health sensors, that it can pull in that information and all of that ecosystem. Obviously, Apple is best positioned to do that. Microsoft and Google have tried this to a lesser extent. They tried to do it more with software. But if you can do that kind of thing, and Apple has all of these devices, you know, these hundreds of millions of devices already in circulation, it's going to be easier for somebody like Apple to do it. And they have experience doing this kind of ecosystem play. That all of a sudden it could become a really, really interesting thing to be able to, use your Apple device. I don't think it's going to be exclusive to the watch, honestly. I think the watch just might be a way that it could potentially make it easier without you having to pull your phone out of your pocket or make sure that it's, you know, connected and that kind of thing.
Also, the watch could be a monitor, right? Because it's on your wrist.
Sure.
Sure. Well, it's like if you look at how Apple does things, they have hero products, flagship products like the iPhone and the iPad, and they also have things like the Apple TV, which are ecosystem enhancers. You can plug your iPhone or iPad into a television and watch stuff, but it's so much easier, and it makes the product so much better if you get an Apple TV.
Yeah.
And the iWatch sounds similar to that, where if you know you can get an iPhone, absolutely, and do this kind of stuff, but it'll be so much more convenient if you have that on your device, on your wrist, reporting directly. And it always sounds like hyperbole when Tim Cook says, we want to make great products that improve people's lives. But when you break that down, it basically means Apple wants to make better products that make them more money and that enhance the value of their ecosystem. And an iWatch fits all three of those criteria for their entire product line.
It's interesting because your first thought about a watch is it would be a fashion product. It would be kind of an accessory. It would be expensive. It wouldn't change anybody's life. But you make it a health and fitness monitor. It does.
And you look at the directional AirPlay and iOS. I mean, there's so many technologies that they're doing that look unrelated right now, but that they're decoupling iOS from the device and they're letting iOS communicate back and forwards with other technologies. And that's when their play, whether it's iOS in the home, iOS on your wrist, iOS in the car, starts making so much sense, you know, 2 years out, 3 years out.
By the way, first GoDaddy ad, and talk about a shift from last year. Last year, of course, it was a nerd kissing Bar Raffelli with disgusting smacking sounds. This year, it was a slightly overweight woman who makes puppets talking about her GoDaddy site. So I think we see the new direction for GoDaddy. It ain't sexy, baby.
It's new, but not better.
No, I'm not putting her down. I mean, we love puppet makers. Apple is taking that Arizona Sapphire plant live this month, according to Mark Gurman and 9to5 Mac, aggressively pushing... Now, Sapphire is used for watch faces, but it's presumably could be an alternative to Gorilla Glass. Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
This may not
expensive right now, but eventually, yeah.
But if they're saying make something now, it's got to be for something this year.
I mean, it's already used on the Touch ID sensor. It's already used on the camera sensor. Putting it on a small display that people might wear that gets hit against things more often than a phone in your pocket makes sense.
Makes sense.
So this doesn't mean isn't definitive evidence that they're going to do a watch.
They haven't used liquid metal yet, Leo. So, you know, so you never know.
Yeah, we're waiting for liquid metal.
Now there was. I'm trying to remember where this report was. That there was somebody that bought. They bought a company, the company that's doing some of this, that had figured out a way to streamline this process, save you time, save you money in creating
that's
the
sapphire. Yeah.
That's this one, right? Okay, good.
Project Cascade.
Yeah. That was Ion Cannon or something that they got.
That shortcut could help them. I mean, there was, if you guys remember that phone, remember Ubuntu was going to do that phone,
right.
Their big thing. That was, they were going to use Sapphire Crystal for the whole, the whole face of the phone. So it's not like it's out of bounds that you can't do it yet. It's completely prohibitive. But it is expensive. But if these guys have made a breakthrough, then it's possible it could go on a phone. I think it's probably more realistic that that's another year or so away, but for a watch face where you don't have to use as much of this stuff, it makes sense. I mean, I think glass, we're going to look back in a few years and we're going to laugh at all these devices that used to have glass and that we used to drop and break all the time. You know, that's going to be a thing of the past I think within 2 to 3, if you know, maybe 3 to 5 years at the most, because there are a number of competitors that are going to go after this. When I was in Israel last year looking at some technologies there was a professor and some students that had developed a polymer that is virtually indestructible. They use it in Israel for windows that are missile proof, right? If a missile hits that window, it does not break it. And they're saying that they can take that and use that, and they could potentially use it on smartphones, on touch screens. They're trying to commercialize it. So there's a number of ways that they're going after it after that. And so I think it's only a matter of time before, you know, Gorilla Glass the gig is up there.
As long as we're talking Apple technologies, we can mention iBeacon and the Super Bowl. Here's the tie-in. iBeacons all over New York City, Times Square, and MetLife Stadium playing ads on your iPhone. Things like looking to buy some Super Bowl merchandise? Straight ahead, Macy's, fourth floor.
Get tickets right here.
Get your tickets right here. It's according to this article in the New York Times, for now, the alerts are mostly limited to practical news like the nearest entry gate or promoting in-store sales. But already the technology has privacy advocates and legal experts brimming with concern. When do they not brim with concern?
When they froth.
They're either frothing or brimming. It's you never see a privacy advocate just sitting quietly on his hands. So there are iBeacons. They'll be in several hundred stores in public areas in the next coming months, including 24 Major League Baseball stadiums. Wow,
it's like a hammer, Leo. You can take a hammer and knock in a nail, or you can hit somebody in the head with it. And the iBeacon's the same thing. It will let, you know, blind people use national parks. Fantastic. It will bother me with ads in a store. Terrible. And it's up to us to tell people what we'll tolerate and won't tolerate with this technology.
Here's a graphic from the National Football League. You're on a Verizon phone. A pop-up message says, get your picture taken with the Lombardi Trophy located between the 43rd and 44th streets on Broadway. So if you're walking through the fan zone, you could do that. Boy, you know, we were at the fan zone last year in New Orleans at the Super Bowl. I'm so glad they did not have this. That would have been extraordinarily annoying. Anyway, this is, I guess, really in some ways the national debut of iBeacons.
I mean, just turn it off. You just go to privacy settings, turn it right off, and you'll never be bothered.
Yeah. Did you know that ABC is going to do a TV show called Selfie?
Mm-hmm. Sounds great, doesn't it?
Oh, my.
No.
It took them that long.
It's a comedy inspired by My Fair Lady that tells the story of a self-obsessed 20-something woman, well, there you go, who's more concerned with likes than being liked. After suffering a very public and humiliating breakup, she becomes the subject of a viral video and suddenly has more social media followers than she ever imagined, but for all the wrong reasons. She enlists the help of a marketing expert at her company to help repair her tarnished image.
Can you imagine the pitch for this?
going to be social media, TV
social shows, media, social selfies. Media. What is the word of the year 2013? It's selfie. Now you have a pilot named Selfie.
And Sex in the City was selfies. Selfie in the City sells itself.
So there's, so far, the good news is just a pilot. Doesn't mean it's going to go anywhere. We're going to take a break. I want to talk about the situation at Microsoft. Who is the next CEO? Apparently, the New York Times, Business Week, and others have decided because they just couldn't wait for the board to figure this thing out. But first, a word from our friends at Audible, the best way to listen to books, audible.com. Yes, I said listen, not read. The thing about Audible is they have 150,000 titles. You can listen to the book on your smartphone. I listen in my car because my phone Bluetooths it to my car. You can listen on the desktop, on a tablet, Android, BlackBerry, iPhone, Windows Phone. They have this in 2013, 564,640,778 listening hours. I don't know how they know that, but they say they do. Have you tried Audible.com? If you haven't, I want to get you two books, two titles, absolutely free. There's a great feeling when you're an Audible subscriber, as I am, when you see two credits available at the top of the page. You get, oh, yes, I get two books. Well, I'm going to give you those two credits right now. Lots of wonderful, wonderful literature, fiction and nonfiction, classics, history, science fiction. They've got a fabulous science fiction category. I've been listening to a lot of business books, technology books, like Nick Bilton's Hatching Twitter. I just finished the Amazon book by Brad Stone, The Everything Store. Leander Connie's new book about Johnny Ive is on audible.com. But what I like to do is do the nonfiction fiction dance. So I one fiction, one nonfiction. The new Carl Hyacin is that. I love Carl Hyacin. Dance of the Reptiles are going to be listening to that, I'm sure. Monuments Men, you ready to go to the movie? Well, read the book first. It's the true story that the movie's based on. So here's the deal. If you go to audible.com/twit2, you'll be signing up for the Platinum plan. That's two books a month. But you can listen or you can download those $2 for free because your first month is free. You'll also get the daily, this is new, 100 Years of Solitude. I didn't know this. This is a new, and John Lee narrates it. He's one of their better narrators. They have great people reading these books. So you get the daily digest of the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, plus your two books. Groundhog Day is here. Books you won't mind rereading. Oh, yeah, Daniel Suarez's Demon. It's another nice thing about Audible. I have been an Audible member since 2000. I have 500 books in my library. I can listen to them again. If you have the Audible app on your iPhone or your Android device and your Windows phone, you just you go through your library and say, oh, I want to listen to that again. And you can. This is very exciting to me, and it's only $1.95, so don't use your credit on this. I don't know if you know this, but The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, before it was a book, before it was a movie, was a BBC radio play. They are now, for the first time I can remember, offering the original Douglas Adam BBC radio plays, first broadcast in 1978 on Radio 4. This is very exciting to me that this is available. They're making a deal out of it. It's a daily deal. So here's what you do. Okay, you join Audible, you get your two books, and then for $1.95 you get this too. This should be in everybody's collection. The greatest radio play of all time, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. If you've read the book, if you've seen the movie, that's not it. This is it, the original. Just love it. And they have all of them. They have it all. Wow. We love them. Audible.com. Go to audible.com/twit2. You get your two books. Free, your credits, your daily digest of the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal. A great deal for people who enjoy listening to audio, which I think you do or you wouldn't be listening to this show. Love it. Offer good in the U.S. and Canada. So, but you know what? If you're outside the U.S. or Canada, Audible has bookstores all over the world. Just check your local Audible. You can't use this offer, but then join it. You'll love it. Audible.com/twit2. So apparently it's Satya Nadella. You have the story on GigaOm, the New York Times reported. I think it was Business Week who first leaked this.
Bloomberg Business Week, I think, had it first.
Bloomberg,
Bloomberg Business Week. Now,
I just wanted to hear you say that.
Bling, bling, bling. Is everybody just playing off the Bloomberg story, or is this independently confirmed now from other sources? No idea.
I think it's mostly Bloomberg. But Bloomberg. I mean, it's not. This is not a stretch, though, either. No, I think they went after some other candidates, possibly got turned down. You know, and Nadella was the guy sort of waiting in the wings.
Yeah.
And they need to move on this, I think. They're you know, this is dragging on longer than they wanted. And, you know, it's time for them to move. And Nadella's not a bad choice. I mean, he's a boring choice.
He's in enterprise, right? And cloud. It's all the stuff Microsoft cares about.
Yes.
But it's not going to make the stock market sit up and take notice. It's not going to get users excited.
It's not consumer-facing stuff.
No.
And it isn't. It isn't.
The future of Microsoft is not I strongly believe this, and I know I've said it many times on this show and other places, but, you know, the future of Microsoft is not consumer-facing products, I don't think. The future of Microsoft is cloud and enterprise. They're doing well there. They have user trust there. They don't have user trust. They don't have good brands in the consumer business, and other than Xbox. And most people don't think of Xbox as, you know, Microsoft for whatever. They don't connect the two that often, for better or worse. So, yeah.
And this guy seems like, you know, seems like what the market would want. If that is true, which I agree it is, he seems like a good guy.
One of the things that, according to Bloomberg, they're in negotiations, right? By the way, the Times is not quoting Bloomberg Business Week. They're quoting their own sources. So you get Business Week and the New York Times together on something. I got to think this is pretty close. Now, according to the Times, the selection has not been completed, but could be announced as early as next week. Bloomberg said that the board was meeting this weekend, but not during the Super Bowl, because there's apparently, you know, they're in Seattle.
There's a Seattle thing.
But anytime, so they either have met already and voted on this, or they're going to meet after the game. If Seattle wins, Nadella's in. If Denver wins,
Sundar Pichai.
It's Sundar Pichai. That was a BS rumor. That rumor was like crazy.
The interesting thing for me, though, Leo, is that they said that Bill Gates might be, you know, stepping out of the way. And one of the big problems that any would-be CEO would have is the idea that was put forth that Bill Gates would be even more involved in Microsoft. And that is not an attractive proposition for many would-be CEOs.
That's in fact, what Business Week and the Wall Street Journal have been saying all along. Is that what's holding this up is nobody wants to report to Bill Gates. But the Bloomberg story said Gates might step down as chairman. They put John Thompson, board member and head of the search committee, in as chairman. But part of the reason Bill would step down, and one of the things they're saying that Satya Nadella wants, is more Bill Gates involvement. So what I'm reading this is Bill won't be chairman of the board, but he's going to be right there with Nadella. Is that just PR fluff?
It could be. It could be just kind of, you know, justifying power, right? If Nadella is the guy, and he's not well known outside of tech circles, outside of tech insider circles, you know, Bill Gates could be useful. Those two sort of standing together, announcing some things, and that as Nadella becomes more well known, you know, Bill Gates has a lot of PR value to Microsoft in still. And even if Nadella is running the show, I could certainly see that being the case where, you know, Gates is stepping out even further of an involved role. Because it's tough to be chairman. Chairman is still a very active role, and Gates is obviously busy with other things. But stepping back from an active role on the board, but stepping into a little bit of a PR role to help Nadella, you know, become more of a name, become well known, you know, be justified to have that kind of role.
The Bill Gates bump.
The Sundar Pichai thing came from a guy I know, John Furrier in Silicon Valley. He's not known for his scoops or his presence in the and everybody, including Kara Swisher, has said no.
Yeah,
that's not no.
Maybe they asked.
Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it makes no sense. Sundar Pichai, of course, in charge of Chrome for Google. Actually, I'd be thrilled to see him. It'd be maybe more interesting, but I don't. I think it makes no sense at all. Nobody knows for sure if they're going to announce Nadella, but I would guess that Swisher, by the way, has said that Nadella is the likeliest internal candidate. Mm-hmm. I think that makes sense, and I think it would be this week. They need to move quickly to get this over with. We've heard a number of people, Paul Theroux and Mary Jo Foley, both have told us on the Windows Weekly show that insiders at Microsoft feel like they're stuck in limbo because they've
got to move.
They're waiting to hear who's going to run this place. What is that person going to want? They're unlikely to take a lot of initiative. Apparently, according to the latest contract negotiations are ongoing, according to the Wall Street Journal, with Satya Nadella. And that Nadella has asked for Gates' help, which I think is fascinating. That may just be PR.
That's what I would think.
Yeah.
It's a way to save face for everybody.
Right. Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask Bill Gates, before I do anything, don't worry. All right. So it sounds to me, if this is true, that it's Microsoft that is hunkering down and focusing on enterprise and cloud.
They're becoming IBM. How ironic.
Yes.
Feels that way. Yeah.
Yes.
Which is a great business. It's just, again, not one that most people ever see anymore.
Right.
Yeah. Not consumer-facing, brand.
No. Can still make a lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Tell you what, the best way to follow this story would be to watch daily news on TNT is at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC. Tech News Tonight, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 2300 UTC or 2400 UTC. That way you'll know, and we'll certainly break in if they announce. Let's find out, actually. I think Mike Elgin has a look at what's ahead this week.
Coming up this week, the first ever conference on mobile contextual devices starts Wednesday in San Francisco. The show is called In Context. Also, Twitter, Pandora, and Yelp report earnings Wednesday. LinkedIn and AOL have earnings Thursday. That's what's coming up this week. Back to you, Leo.
And I'll add to your list, Mike. I bet you anything we'll be announcing the new CEO of Microsoft sometime this week. So stay tuned. If you missed anything on Twit this week, you missed a mouthful. Let's take a look.
Previously on Twit, Tech News Tonight.
Google is selling Motorola to Lenovo. Page said the sale, quote, does not signal a larger shift for our other hardware efforts.
Triangulation.
This is a soap opera. Hatching Twitter is Nick's new book.
I mean, the best way that I've described it is it's Game of Thrones, but with nerds.
This Week in Google.
Just do me a favor here, folks. Look at the four frames, and which one should I buy?
There you go. No, when he smiles, it works.
Tech News Today.
A new product called Ototo can plug into any set of objects. Then when you touch those objects, the notes play. I got a neighbor that's playing the accordion, and he's not very good at it yet.
Twit. Rack him up.
All right, there you go. That's what was happening this week on Twit. We have had a great time here. I want to thank you guys for taking a little Sunday time with us. Matthew Ingram from GigaOhm.com. What are you going to be working on this week? What big stories do you see coming up?
I have no idea. I have to wait for people to do things so that I can write about them.
Oh, that's
going to be watching Twitter.
That's so old-fashioned.
Yeah.
By the way, it is BlackBerry's first anniversary of the release of BlackBerry 10, and market share has hit the zeros.
Yeah.
Is that possible?
Oh, yeah. It's definitely possible.
Market share is 0.0, according to this graph from the Consumer Intelligence Research Partners.
Which is different
that
than
installed
base.
That might be overstating it a bit. But close.
I think that's
market. Yeah, it's different than installed base. People still have BlackBerrys, but not many people are buying BlackBerrys.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you, Matthew. Great to have you. I really appreciate it. Always fun.
Thanks for having me.
What's it like in Toronto? Is it a little chilly today?
Actually, it's warmed up a bit.
Okay.
So, it's much more mild than it was a week or so ago when it was minus 30.
Yes. I really appreciate you spending some time. Also in the frozen north in Montreal, Renee Ritchie. It's always cold there. I'm not even going to ask you.
It's fine.
Warming up for you would be, 2 degrees.
Winter is not coming, Leo. Winter is here.
Yes, winter is coming. When is Game of Thrones start up again? Soon, right?
It's got to be soon. Yeah.
Yeah. They had the trailer.
Yeah.
Also, of course, from the Tech Republic and CBS Interactive, the great Jason Heiner, who I will never forgive, elected me president of the internet. It's been a terrible, terrible reign. Thank you, Jason.
Election for life.
For life.
Yeah. President for life.
President for El Presidente. Thank you, gentlemen, for spending Super Sunday with me. Thank you all for watching. If you watched live, you really aren't into sports ball, are you? But if you didn't watch live, okay, maybe you are. We do this show live 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time. Let's see, 3 plus 12 is 15 plus 8 is 2300 UTC, right before midnight, international time or universal coordinated time. If you can watch live, do. I love it if you do. We watch the chat room. It's a lot of fun. But if you can't watch live, on-demand versions, audio and video, always available after the fact at our website, twit.tv, and wherever finer podcasts are aggregated, Stitcher, iTunes, all of that stuff. Please subscribe. That way you'll get every episode. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time. Another twit.
This is
in the can. Doing the twit.